Today's show is being brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, believers in good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, Souther.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm very well. Happy to see you.
Thank you.
I like the glasses you're wearing, by the way. Are those new?
No.
All right. It doesn't preclude me from liking them.
It's the sun is setting on our Brooklyn and New York City days here, man. We're heading into the fall.
Yeah, we are.
And now it's like, you know, normally I'm wearing shades. Now I'm just wearing my normal ass shit.
All right. Tortoise shell. Man. I like it.
Well, thanks, buddy.
Yeah. Ugly day out there today. Moving on. Let's talk about the weather.
Hell of a show we got so far. Yeah.
We're going to rip right into it.
Yeah, man. So what's going on, man? How's Koo?
Koo is doing very well. Thanks for asking. We're finally past summer for students anyway. So students are back. So, you know, it's an uptick in business immediately. You sense it all over the city.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have thought of that.
I mean, I'm situated right on the campus of both NYU and Cooper Union. So.
Right.
Lots of student body were missing over the summer, but now they're back. So even in the past couple of days, it's a visible change, which is great. You know, that's just more money for charity.
Yeah.
Do good while being bad. This month's charities are all devoted to flood relief, both domestic and internationally, because of, you know, well, all the hurricane action here in our country and
for sure.
Flooding happening elsewhere. So we're going to get back to that.
Well, you know, the thing is, what's really cool about New York City is that, people come together and, like, they, like you said, do good while being bad.
Do good while being bad. It's an easy thing to do, you know, have a drink and feel, like you're being at least somewhat civically responsible at the same time. It's, you know, it's a good coupling, and it's working out for us really well.
Cool, man.
I appreciate That's you asking.
Great. Yeah, man.
How are things at Grand Army?
Great.
Yeah?
I had a great show last week and, went back to the old Grand Army and had the Michter's people on.
Yeah, yeah, how'd that go?
It was great, man. It's really... really refreshing. Actually, Lacey Hawkins, who was on the show a couple weeks ago.
Lady Hawk.
Yeah. She texted me after the show, and she was like, man, it's really refreshing to hear kind of like a bigger brand talk about, like, basically being very transparent about their process and, like, not, like, throwing together a made-up story about, like, some old political thing, like some being that, like, nah.
Yeah, they saw an opportunity, they seized it, and they're working as hard, like, as they can work it.
It's like just true.
Also, very true humble fellows, both of them.
Yeah,
it was great to have.
And it was like I really liked that show because, like, the actual, like, technical aspects of, like, the business.
Oh yeah, I've been back at Amore Margo all this past week trying to. Explosive proof things.
Did you buy that $90,000
forklift? Yeah, I got it on layaway.
Dude, let me ride it. I'm actually licensed. I'll show you later. I've got a license for.
Is it a class F for forklift? What is that?
Yeah, I don't know, but I will send it to you. I swear to God, I am totally licensed to drive a forklift.
Send it to me with lasers.
Yeah. Well, speaking of New York and being fucking awesome.
Yeah, that's what we were speaking of.
let's introduce our guest today.
Yeah, in the studio today we've got Amanda Schuster. Amanda is the editor-in-chief at Alcohol Professor, and she just, it's not quite released yet, but your book is coming out soon. A week from now, called New York Cocktails, Cocktails Inspired by the Big Apple. Welcome to the studio, Amanda.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So yeah, happy to see you.
So happy to see you guys, too.
What's going on? I mean, nothing. Okay, show's over.
I wrote a book.
That's pretty rad. That's incredibly rad.
It is incredibly rad.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about you first, and then we'll jump into the book a little later.
Yeah.
And let's talk about Alcohol Professor. What is it? What is that? What do you do over there? Talk about Amanda.
Alcohol Professor is an online magazine, I guess. I hate to say that it's a blog. I hate that word, and I feel that the
it's a four-letter word.
It's a four-letter word, and I think the level of work that we're doing, you know, even though it's not in print, is supposed to be, you know, print worthy. So, so it's a magazine about wine, beer, spirits, and cocktails, and all the sort of nerdy aspects of those,
yeah, man,
those elements.
What got you, like, first of all, like, let's go back a little bit further. I mean, like, I am looking at the photo of you in this book right now. Drinking out of a very, like, stylish coupe glass when you're, how old were you in this photo? Like,
I think three or four, yeah.
Yeah.
So your fascination with the cocktail world maybe started earlier, or at least there were some seeds.
Yeah.
There were definitely some seeds. I mean, my parents always would give me a little sip of something at dinner. You know, my father is a big wine collector, and they've always enjoyed, you know, good spirits and good cocktails, and they never wanted me to be left out. You know, it's not like they were, you know, giving me, like, you know, huge, you know, three glasses of wine at dinner or something, but they'd always let me have a little bit of something just so I would know what they were doing.
Was there removes the stigma?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there like I know, like, there's a thing with Italian culture where it's like you get like a glass of wine, but it's like watered down.
Yeah. Right.
Was that like
it's proof
no,
down?
No, it was definitely not watered down. Absolutely. No. And I mean, one of the earliest stories is, and I already knew what it was. They were having a dinner party, and my parents just, you know, childproofing and all that stuff that came later. And so
right.
in the early 70s, you know, they just left all the drinks on the coffee table. And there I am, you know, alone in the living room while the adults are having dinner. And I just walked right up to my mom's glass and downed her whiskey. And I slammed it down on the table, apparently, and said, scotch juice.
Scotch juice.
So I knew what it was even back then.
Actually, you know, as someone who doesn't, like, drink coffee anymore, like, I'm kind of actually curious. Why is it called the coffee table? Like...
Yeah,
that's like most
segue.
The majority of the time that I've put any kind of beverage on that table in the middle of a room, it's been like it's typically a glass of whiskey, or like back in the day it was like you know, some red and white dynamite with a bunch of like cigarettes put out on top of it or something like that.
Those were the days.
I've never had coffee at a coffee table.
Dave, look it up. Are you looking up coffee table?
Yeah, I'm on it.
Okay. See? We got a guy now. We got for that stuff. So the seeds were planted early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then have you, you know, we were talking before the show a little bit, or I was overhearing some talking. We sort of have a party going on in here, by the way.
Yeah,
that's great. A lot of people in the room. Austin Henley and Julie Renee Williams and our new friend. I forgot your name.
Lula from Lula. Bar Sardine.
So yeah, just some guests hanging out. We were talking out there, and you mentioned someone asked you if you bartend, and you said, no, I can't do two things at one time.
Mm-mm.
Which is not nearly enough things at one time to bartend. But
well, there you go.
Yeah. But have you ever? What pulled you into our world?
I think I did it twice. I did it for about two
not
nights.
Not a requirement.
Yeah. And I you know, I've bartended at parties and stuff, just private parties. But I just, you know, people like to sip their drinks rather than wear them. And it's just something that I realize that I'm, you know, I know a lot about what goes into the glass. I even understand how to build the cocktails and the process of making them. But I shouldn't do that for other people while I'm on the spot. It's just, it doesn't work out.
Right.
Yeah.
Leave it to the pros.
Yeah. So I'm happy to write about
whenever they get here.
Yeah.
And Souther does the dishes.
And I do the dishes. That's always my thing.
Yeah. I mean, I was so amazed when Paul Clark was guest bartending a coup a couple months ago.
That's
and
right.
I was like, how are you doing this? I was so impressed.
I can answer that in one word. How are you doing this? Slowly.
Yeah.
That's how he did it.
Yeah.
Not the fastest guy, but very charming and affable, and people really enjoyed coming in to see him, and it was great.
Hey, man, he's an Okie.
That's right.
We move a lot slower in Oklahoma, man.
More methodical, more thoughtful movements. It's like watching Tai Chi. So then what... Thanks from the peanut gallery. So what roped you in? So do you have a degree in writing? Did you like? How did you?
Yeah.
And then how did you attach that to this angle?
So my brother once removed, Jason Bylin, one of my best friends, once said about me that I have failed at more things than most people have tried. And I've done a lot of things in my life, and writing's always been something that's kind of been a common thread with no matter what I'm doing, whatever. I mean, I actually have a degree in medieval history.
Super useful.
Yep, super useful. And I minored in writing at NYU. And throughout my life, I've just always, you know, tried to sprinkle some color into whatever I've had to write. When I worked for the Time Incorporated Picture Collection in the 90s, whenever I had to catalog pictures, I tried to make the catalog entry more interesting by, you know, livening up the text. Or if, like, when I was doing graphic design for a wedding invitation store, you know, I would like try to get the couples to write something a little more interesting on their wedding invitation than, you know, come meet us at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. So stuff like that. So it's always just kind of worked out that way. And when I finally left all that and I went to Astor, which was one of my first jobs out of sommelier school, and they had us write staff picks, I had a lot of fun with that. And somebody,
those staff picks are actually pretty cool. Did you kick that ball off over there? I think they still maintain it.
They do, yeah, and then they still maintain it.
I don't mean the staff picks, but I mean the writing on them is pretty compelling.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I had a lot of fun with that, and somebody actually discovered me while I was doing that. There was somebody who was starting up a publication and said, "Hey, I really love your staff picks. Would you write an article for us?" And I kind of went from there.
What publication was that? Can you say? Do you remember?
It was called Whiskey. It doesn't exist anymore. It was called Whiskey Life.
Whiskey Life.
Yeah. Whiskey Life. R.I.P. Whiskey Life.
Yeah.
Whiskey Life is a risky life.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You got discovered like a star.
Kind of. I mean, it took.
Bye, Julie.
Bye, Julie.
Bye.
She has to go to work. She was just hanging out.
But it took a really long time. I mean, after Astor, I was at Morrell for a while, and I physically saw the economy collapse from our office window. Our office was not on the store premises. It was across the street from Lehman Brothers. We actually saw everybody on the day they were fired in the cafeteria, hugging and crying with each other,
brutal.
And it was just awful. And, I knew that in the next couple of weeks, I better figure something else out pretty quick. And I did, and it took a really long time. I feel like I've had to sort of like claw my way up, but I did it.
Do you think that with all the, like you said, you've done a lot of different types of jobs, that obviously helped you out with like your writing style, right? Like just like understanding like all the different sides.
Yeah, definitely.
And finding your voice.
Yeah.
That's the thing I'm working on. That's definitely a big thing.
That's the thing I'm working on. I think it's hard for me. I feel like my voice is my actual voice. You know,
then
talking.
Then it should be. Then just write as you're speaking and make it conversational.
Yeah, especially for like a lot of listeners, and like actually like when we were at Tales in July when we had our seminar, Hot Mic. I couldn't believe how many people who were wanting to get into like podcasting and doing radio on the subject of spirits and cocktails and bartending. The thing is, like, there's not a lot of... you can't go to school for like writing about like booze, you know?
Right.
You can, like, it's something you just have to have, like, you have to pick up like all these different parts and put them together like along the way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And you have to like it.
Yeah.
And you have to like it. Yeah, I think that's got to be true for this. Maybe not every field that you want to write about, you don't have to like it, yeah. I think you got to like this. It's otherwise you're just suffering through literally poison, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but you're like, poisoning yourself for your craft.
For me, it's like when I write cocktail articles for different publications, it's like I'm freelance. Like I do it when I feel like it, and when someone throws me an assignment. It's like to do it as like a full time job. It's like it's gonna be really hard. I mean, like I know that like Robert Simonson just posted about your book today on Instagram, and he's reviewing it. And he's
be kind, Robert.
Hit her where she lives.
You know, the thing with Robert though is like he used to be an opera critic.
Yeah,
and then he turned to the cocktail and booze side of writing, and And he's like, once you get into that side, it's like you've got to constantly. He's done a really good job of like finding articles, and like especially with like publications like Punch, you know, you can get weird with stuff. Like, you know, Brad Thomas Parsons, his book Distillery Cats is coming out.
I'm so excited this about month. That.
I know, me too. We're doing actually.
Never mind my book. I mean, Brad, man, that's gonna be awesome.
I know, it's so funny because like people are like, dude, you want bitters. Amaro
Cat.
Distillery Cats.
Which trajectory took a hard left.
But, you know, the thing is, like, he was saying to me, he's like, dude, you got to do it in threes, man.
Yeah, that's what he said. You write a book, you got to write three.
Yeah, you got to write three. And he went really crazy on the third one. And I've seen the book. It's fucking adorable.
It really is. I've seen it too.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, but just throwing yourself out there and becoming a writer and a journalist, it's like you have to. You get creative with these things. It's like we don't want to write another like just cocktail book. It's got to have a narrative, right?
So like, which was the huge challenge that I had writing this, because I think my publisher had. Well, they had a very specific idea of what they wanted with this book. They had already published.
And they gave you plenty of time to write it, right?
Yeah, tons of time. that's another factor everybody must take into consideration. I had 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
From start to finish.
Holy guacamole. To write this book. That's got a term in the book world that's called crashing a book.
Yeah.
They wanted to crash this book out.
They wanted to crash this book, and they had their reasons. I don't know what they are. I don't want to know. But
whatever. It's certainly a motivator.
Yeah, definitely a motivator. And but one of the they were very specific about certain things that they wanted to have in the book, because they'd already done two books. They'd done Paris Cocktails and New Orleans Cocktails that had a certain format and had certain sections in it that they wanted to echo in this one. And as I was having the conversation with them, I'm like, yeah, I'll play your game. But if you're only giving me 6 weeks to write it, damn straight, you're playing it with my rules.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff that I just kind of turned on its head to make it my own. And I think it turned out pretty good. I mean, like, they wanted me to they wanted a section on it where they wanted to have a Great Gatsby party. And I was like, come on, really? That's not even New York City.
Right.
You know, and so I had to turn that into how would Amanda Schuster write about a Gatsby party? And that's what I presented to them. And they accepted it, thank goodness. But
well, they had no option if the 6 weeks well, was the out. You like turn that one in on week five, day six, and be like, oh, here it is. You like it or you don't like it, done.
Deal.
Yeah. I think there's also like what's interesting to me about like books that are coming out nowadays about like cocktails, and especially New York City cocktails, is like they're admittedly we live in a bubble.
Oh, yeah.
Like the craziest bubble.
Yeah, it's called ever. The atmosphere.
Well, shut up.
But like, oh, here in New York, right?
Yeah, in New York. fuck you, man. But we live in a bubble. It's like very like kind of self-sufficient and like very actually like nurturing in itself. Oh, yeah. But the thing is, like we have like all these old cocktail books, you know, all history, and we recycle a lot of it, and we respect it and nurture it. But the thing is, like, when a lot of people write about the modern idea of like New York bartending and New York cocktails, it tends to be like this kind of romanticized idea of like turn of the century, like classicism, and it's not really what's going on right now. No. And we're
past that.
Yeah. We're way past it. We're a century past that. But it's still like very like evident. Like when, like me being from Oklahoma, like I, when I talk to some of my bartender friends from back there, they're like, yeah, man, you're Big Apple. Like everyone's just drinking Manhattans and martinis and have curly mustaches and shit, and like, well, you know, yeah, there is that, but like, but that's not really
that our view.
That's well, so there it actually
I know it
is.
Probably is, yeah.
It actually is.
It is.
And think about even the Japanese cocktail bar scene. It's like it's all based on like a lot of it's based on like old school New York practices.
Yeah,
you know, and that's really cool. But, I mean, like, there's so much happening here. Like, when you go to, like, Attaboy or, like, Diamond Reef, and everyone's wearing, like, Hawaiian shirts, like, unbuttoned all the way. And, like, yeah. Just making, like, pina coladas and penicillins and whatever.
Yeah, right?
It is, you know, like, it's like, that's what the New York bar scene is. We've, like, moved past a certain point of, like, all right, respect the craft. Now we're going to have fun.
Right. Right.
We've talked about it a lot.
We talk about it. It comes up a lot.
Yeah.
We describe it as the phase we had to go through. Mm-hmm. We had to go through this, like, holier than thou. We're assholes.
It's a rite of passage.
As the bartender, I'm an asshole. You don't know as much as me as the guest. I have to teach you. But that was really just us sort of stomping our feet and establishing that we were serious. And now that everyone understands that we're serious, I think we've all turned way down the dial on that one. And now we're just, like, friendly. Because we've educated the consumer enough to realize that, like, A.
That's true.
You've been coming to my bar for 5 years, and you've seen me here for 5 years. You realize I do this for a living. This isn't just a thing I did for a summer, right? So it's a period we just kind of had to go through.
Yeah, but like, what's
and cool. we took all that from history, and now we're kind of writing our own history.
Yeah,
and
that's people, exactly right.
And people like you or Amanda are writing that history.
Or actually, literally
writing what will be history in the next set. They'll be looking like, oh, man, did you ever have a copy? Like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's right up there with my Dave Embry. Oh, yeah. Deal.
That'd be nice.
We're about at the halfway mark, so we should take a pause and hear some information from Bob, who's always watching over us here in the studio. Dave, take us out for a commercial break, and we'll come back with Amanda Schuster, and we'll keep talking about her book, New York Cocktails.
Hey, this is Chef Eric from Roberta's Radio. I love eating pizza for every meal, but sometimes I've got to branch out. Bob's Red Mill makes some stellar breakfast foods.
Hey, Eric, the food in your big, bright, beautiful breakfast bowl looks delicious.
Thanks. It's muesli.
Muesli?
Nah, muesli. It's like raw granola. You should try it.
I don't know. My rich daddy buys me quail eggs and foie gras for breakfast every morning.
Well, let me hip you on to something else. Did you know Bob's Red Mill is the flagship sponsor of Heritage Radio Network? I bet you if we call Bob himself, he can convince you.
Hi, Bob here.
Wait, is this the man from the muesli package?
Yes, I'm Bob Moore. How can I help you?
Hey there, Bob. This is Eric from Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with Mike, who I'm trying to convince to try muesli.
Oh, I love muesli. Muesli is such an easy way to start the day. I can take a bag of muesli and munch on it in my car and get full whole grain nutrition for everything I need for at least half the day.
That is incredible. But what the heck is in the muesli anyway?
It has rolled oats, rolled wheat, rolled barley, rolled triticale, and, of course, our dried fruits and the seeds that are so important to our health. It's one of my very, very favorites.
After Bob's glowing recommendation, you going to try it?
Like they say, try it. You'll like it.
All right. Let me at that muesli.
By the way, you can find more delicious whole grain breakfast ideas at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
I'll check that out. I'll surf over there.
Surf on over, dude.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And we have Amanda Schuster in the studio today. We've been talking about her book. Well, we've been talking with her, but not so much about the book yet.
Yeah,
it's called New York Cocktails. It's out of Cider Mill Press. We need to get in the book. Let's talk about this book.
Let's talk about the book
physically itself. First of all, I love its weight. It's got a good weight.
Yeah, it's great weight.
And this cutout, the cover is very thick, and there's a cutout of a coupe glass.
It's a die cut in the industry, but...
Oh, pardon me.
Die cut, yes.
So we both worked in graphic design and print.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, that's why I really respect a lot of the design elements of this. Like, I love the font. I love the actual, like, weight of the cover. The die cut going into the map of Manhattan. It's really cool.
They did a beautiful job.
It's really, it's a sexy little book.
Really? I mean, they explained what it was going to look like when they first did, you know, when they first told me about it, but I still, when I see it in person, I'm like, wow, they really did a fine job. And I had nothing to do with the design elements, by the way.
I'm actually going to use this. First of all, thank you for signing it to the cocktail
to cowboy. The cocktail cowboy.
But if you don't mind, what I'm going to do is with this cutout, it's a, for our listeners out there, it's a die cut of the front cover. It's the silhouette of a coupe glass. And I'm going to use this with an atomizer with bitters and like make a cocktail on top of a cocktail, on top of an egg white fizz drink.
Ooh, can I be there when you do that? Can we do that after the show?
Definitely will be. Sorry, Sutter, beat you to it.
Yeah, I know. This is awesome. I asked you off the air, and you didn't really have an answer. Well, you did have an answer.
I did.
Yeah, that's right. I said, what's your favorite part of the book, or what's the part you're kind of the most proud of? You said, I'm proud of the whole book, and of course you should be. It's gorgeous.
Thanks.
But then you followed up by saying the introduction.
Talk to us
about that.
Yeah, I mean, all of this. I birthed this thing in 6 weeks instead of the normal gestation period of 9 months.
Speedy gestation.
Frankie
cocktails.
That was a fun day.
Frankie, you're in the book.
But
this Joaquin, God, you know,
the
most fun about this book to me is like looking through. It's like it's basically like a yearbook. It's like it's just like it's actually like a living Facebook.
Well, changing my answer a little bit. It's I'm very proud of all of it. I think it's what's really cool is that in 6 weeks I was able to put together a pretty decent snapshot of what it's like to drink in New York City right now, and also a bit about its past. I mean, there's some places I would have liked to have been able to include that didn't make it for various reasons. It just, I couldn't get there. I couldn't get, you know, the recipes in time or whatever it was. It just
These things happen.
But that's
with a 6 week deadline.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were scrambling like a crazy person in the first week or so.
And also they only wanted 100 recipes, and I could have done this in 250 recipes and still not covered everything.
Yeah, but of course. Yeah.
But 6 weeks,
such a dense place.
Think about it. Like if you spend 6 weeks in New York City, you're still not going to see everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, no.
And also,
how long have you been here?
6 weeks. I've been here.
Have you seen everything 11, yet?
12 years? No.
Exactly.
But the thing is, like, you know, in 6 weeks, places do open and close.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing. It's like.
And it happened.
So,
yeah.
So you started, like, cherry picking, like more, like, iconic places that, like, have, like, some wherewithal that they're going to be around for a while, right?
Yeah.
So, like.
Sorry, Maya Well.
Well. So yeah.
They'll be back.
Yeah.
They'll be back. Going to resurrect that action.
But It must have been like, well, I mean, you're already writing and you're already out there, out and about, like hitting up all these bars, restaurants, and it must have been actually like you said, to pick 100.
That's hard. That's
really hard.
That's hard editing.
It's very hard to do.
That's some hard editing.
Yeah. It was painful. It was really painful. And
well, I mean, I don't want to scare you with a 6 week deadline, but. That, is that room for book two then?
I would love to write another book. I don't know if I definitely want to write another book anyway. I've had something in my head for quite some time. It's a very different book, but I could do a second volume of this for sure and include a few things. I mean, like Coup didn't make it into the book because it had just opened, I think, right when we were looking at proofs and there was just no way to get it in there in time. And you know, Diamond Reef and as you were saying, and a bunch of other really, I didn't even get to talk to the Donna guys, which sucks, and they totally deserve it.
With
you know,
Leaf and all the crew.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, okay, so that aside, thank you. You know, it'd be cool. Like, I just want to, I'm actually suggesting this idea just because I want to ride along with you.
Ooh.
It should be like a fucking New York dive bar.
Oh yeah,
book.
It's funny.
Let's write that book.
You should say that.
Oh. Well, okay.
Did we unearth something on accident? Finally, we're aha journalists. Aha.
Aha.
I don't want to get too into it, but that's
okay. NDA, non-disclosure. All right, fine.
That's something I've had rattling around in my brain for a while.
All right. Well,
all right. we'll look.
I mean, we'll talk about it at Jimmy's Corner.
Well, yes.
Cheers to that.
Cheers. Right. Well, with Lambrusco first, yeah.
Lambrusco.
well, while we were chitty-chattying, I also poured some... Amanda brought us a flask. Damon, I don't know if you saw the flask on the table.
Yeah.
There's a flask here of Havana 7.
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So beautiful stuff.
Got a little bit of rum to drink while we talk about New York cocktails. But I said that jokingly in the beginning, and Amanda said, well, we can drink the rum to everybody that's down in along the Gulf and everything that's suffering from all the rain and hurricanes and whatnot. So let's drink to those guys some Havana 7. Cheers, and thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, cheers.
Delightful juice that we're all super fans of, even though we're not supposed to be. Prohibit something. Make it delicious.
Right?
That's, that's what happens.
Definitely.
Well, you know, on that note, like, things that you're not supposed to have or, like, can't really get to, I wanted to ask your opinion, like, speaking of, like, dive bars and just, well, any establishments in New York and anywhere, there's, like, there's been, like, kind of a lot of, like, over the past few years, a lot of places have been shutting down.
Yeah.
The rent is too damn high.
It's too damn... Actually, I learned of a new casualty over the weekend that's breaking my heart. So Bait and Tackle and Red Hook closing in January.
I know. That's...
And that is horrible. That is criminal.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, I mean, like, what's the point of that? Is it development? Like,
probably. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, I actually don't know the backstory about that. You know, sometimes it's the owners themselves decide that they're going to close something because they've had enough and they don't want to pass it on to somebody. Sometimes it's a greedy landlord. Sometimes it's a developer. You know, you just never know.
I mean, there was the whole situation with Sonny's, like, earlier this year.
Yeah, they bootstrapped that thing.
But we saved them.
Hoisted it back up. Yeah.
I mean, we all put money towards it.
Yeah, that was all community love. That was amazing. Yeah.
I went down a couple times. I bought some art.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hanging on my wall now.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You bought saloon art?
No, I bought from what's his name again? Ted.
Ted Haig?
No, the guy who was selling the art there. I'm gonna forget his name. He also works there.
Oh.
He has like the line drawings. It's really beautiful.
Oh no, are you talking about?
His name starts with a T, I think. Anyway.
Are you talking about John Thibault?
John Thibault.
There we go, John Thibault.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
They're in the book, Colleen and John.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, patrons of the
arts.
Great,
great people.
Yeah. Amazing.
And he just works at Fort Defiance.
Yeah, Fort Defiance. Yeah, not Sonny's. There we go.
But
clearing my head up. I had a few drinks.
Speaking of, I had a few drinks
and I bought some art.
Yeah.
People on the move.
You want to loosen up my wallet? Give me a few drinks.
Yeah.
The idea of, you know, what's really fucked up about this country.
That's a whole other show.
Is, you know, like when you think about breweries like Weinstephaner, it's been around since 1040.
1040.
1040.
Yeah.
It's almost 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
And then you look at bars in London and Paris that have been around for like 500 years.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like nothing to it.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. But then here it's like you can't have a bar, a restaurant more than like 20 years.
Right, that's a huge accomplishment here.
But there's
20 years. You make it 20 years.
It's huge that you made it.
Yeah.
But
you made it 10 years ago.
It's not actually,
you're crushing it.
Yeah.
It's not actually that you made it. It's like you survived.
Yeah.
It's
you survived a lot.
You're still surviving.
Yeah.
You survived a whole generation of drinkers and a whole generation of people who are, you know, about the way they order. About what they're going to order when they come into your bar and what their expectations are. I mean, things change so much in 10 years.
And also, speaking of like, I mean, like, I don't know. I get really like uppity about this shit, like in this country, about like the preservation of our history, like with like bars and restaurants. And the thing is, like, we're drinking 7-year-old Havana Club rum.
Contraband. Delicious. We're drinking contraband.
Contraband. And thank you for it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you go to Havana, and the newest car that you can see there is from like 1962.
Sure.
Yeah. They wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. And it's great. And they still run, and they preserve them.
Yep.
They work on their goddamn cars, and
I mean,
like, why can't we do that here? Like, why can't we like preserve great historic buildings and
establishments.
You know, especially that, because to me, like, we were actually talking about employees only before the show today, and I I met this couple who was at Tales of the Cocktail about like 6 years, 7 years ago, something like that. And this couple, the employees only had this big party, and they had a tattoo artist there doing like EO tattoos. And I was like, man, it's kind of weird. Like, people are getting like tattoos from this bar.
Yeah, it's a brand.
You know, it's definitely a brand.
That's actually one of the bars I struggled a bit with when it came time to write the book. And do I even include them? Simply because it's been a really long time, to be perfectly honest, since I've gone there as a patron. Because I find it a little hard work. It's always busy. You know, it's hard to find a place at the bar. I don't know anybody who's working there anymore. I used to. And I was like, do we even need to talk about it? Should this book be more about places that are kind of like more unsung, you know, instead of a branded place like EO? But then I was like, no, that's really part of the establishment. That's an important part of the scene.
Yeah, agreed.
And it always will be. And you really can't discount
the thing
them.
Is like,
yeah, agreed.
I felt the same way until this like couple, they were telling me about the reason why they'd never had tattoos before. They were getting tattoos. They were getting EO tattoos. And I asked them, I was interviewing them with one of our Heritage Radio Zoom recorders, of course.
This is that story.
I think I spilled a drink on it or something. Yeah. but the thing is, like, I will tell you now, the story was they were a really beautiful couple, and they were so, like, in love. And when I asked them the question of, like, why they were getting these tattoos of this bar, not having any previous tattoos, they're like, well, why don't you tell the story? No, you tell the story. Oh, well, okay, I will. Sure. For us, start telling the story. Like, we met here. We caught eyes, like, across the bar. Mm-hmm. And then started talking, exchanged numbers. We had our first date at this bar. Then I proposed to her at this bar. Then we had, like, all of our, like, anniversaries at this bar, had our wedding reception at this bar. And so, like, at that point, you have to realize that it's not just, and I think we all do, but, like, it's not just a place where people go and get drunk. It's, like, something that's a big part of your life, you know? And, and that, like,
that place etched a pretty deep score on their personal history. Yeah.
And the only way it can do like that all over the city.
And the only way it can do that is to be a bar of longevity.
Yeah,
right? Exactly.
That wouldn't have happened in the span of 2 years, which a lot of bars only make 2 years. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So that's
meaningful.
Yeah.
That is meaningful.
To me,
should read the first line of what I wrote about EO then. to your listeners, because now I feel kind of bad.
Well, you know what?
I actually am very proud of this. This is something I wrote at like 4 o'clock in the morning when I was on fumes, like 2 days before the damn manuscript was due. And I was like, what the hell am I going to say about EO? And this is, and what I wrote is what I wrote. And it's, listen, I had to have fun with it.
Of course. But the thing is, like, I'm just using EO as an example.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, any bar anywhere, especially in New York, that has the, like, impending doom of being shut down, because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, Keen's or Delmonico's, something
goodness.
Like that.
Thank goodness. Oh, yeah. I don't know what I'd do without Keen's.
I know, me too.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Keen's, yes. I'm always at that place. I will never get enough of the, you know, they have the petite mutton chop at lunch for half the price.
Oh, I know.
Oh, that's very nice. Oh,
but
know
also,
that.
They have,
with the escarole and everything. It's gorgeous.
We could have a whole show about Keen's, and we should. We should have.
I'd love to be on.
We should have Albert on that show.
Yeah, we should. He's awesome. Employees only. It starts on page 144. You say, the bartenders at employees only wear white double-breasted jackets as uniforms. And I admit, the first time I sat at the bar, I wasn't sure if I should order a drink or provide a medical history. Yeah, they look like, in this photo of them all standing in a row, they definitely look like, maybe not doctors, but they definitely look like your pharmacist kind of guy.
Yeah, well, don't they
apothecary
look like they're
style?
It's like, am I going to order a cocktail, or am I getting a probe right now? What's happening?
Hey, huh? The night is young.
Who knows where it's going to be, man?
Right?
But to that point, it's like, no, it's like people need places to go to where they feel like
a sanctuary.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And that's actually something I wanted to address on the show about the sanctuary. One of the things that bothers me about the business right now is this this emphasis on being exemplary. You know, your bar is the number one bar in the world. This bar is the number, you know, the best place for this, and this is the best bartender in the world, and this is the best this in the world. And I'm so tired of it. I don't like to go to these award shows. I always avoid them. And one of the reasons that bothers me is I think the best bar in the world is one, if you come in on a rainy night and you're tired and you've had a terrible day and you pull up a seat at the bar and the bartender speaks to you like the only human that's spoken to you, like a normal person the entire day long, and mixes a drink that just tastes so damn good in that moment. That's the best bar in the world.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not about waiting in line so you can finally get a seat. It's not about having something that has like a $5 million garnish on it.
Totally.
You know,
my favorite bartenders make the shittiest drinks.
Yeah.
Actually.
Exactly. And these
are tending the
bar. That's why we're friends.
Yeah. Exactly. And
go
so
to Amore and Margo.
You know, I just want to say, listen, you know, I love the bar, and I know a lot of these bars that have been named as the best bars in the world, and they are damn fine places to drink. They're fantastic places to drink. Yeah, you know, but
it's just our human nature. We want to pigeonhole things and put titles on them and all that rigmarole.
But at the same time,
it's attaboys and pats on the back, and it's fine.
But the thing is, I don't go to a bar to, like, I mean, the rigmarole, like, all that stuff. Like, you go through the hoops and all that stuff. Like, yes, it's nice to have, like, a really fucking crazy, awesome, like, really well thought out, like, crazy production of a drink.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, gotta think about it in the way that it actually is. It's like, I will definitely, like, when I go to a restaurant for a really amazing meal, it's like that's an experience like just like going to the bar. But the thing is, like, I know that, like, going to a bar, it's like sometimes, like, I'm going to a bar to have a drink to, like,
get it on,
like, just
turn it up.
Turn it up. Like,
I mean,
I don't need it to be fancy. I want it to be like a fucking beer and shot. And I want, like, more than anything, it's like if I'm rolling to a bar solo, like, when I'm not feeling great, mm-hmm. I'm having a bad day, mm-hmm. it's like a fucking $300 Manhattan's not going to cheer me up.
No.
Right.
You know, one of my favorite moments from that time is a Jake Walk RIP. There was a night I was
our
having.
Hood.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was having such a bad day. Ugh. It's like Murphy's Day. It was just
terrible. Is it because
terrible.
I was there?
I think you might have been there.
I was there, actually.
You know what? And there was the night that Pat and Brian decided that they were gonna play Danger Zone every hour on the hour just because.
Sounds about right.
And
Pat's in town, by the way.
Yeah. Is he still here?
I think so.
Pat Halloran. You don't write. You don't call. Anyway, so I was just like, man, you can't get this anywhere else. And it was so annoying, but it was so fun.
Sure, annoying but charming. I always say, you know, I relate everything back to food because I was a chef for so long. Even though I've eclipsed that time behind the bar, it still resonates with me because it resonates with everyone. Everyone eats, not everyone drinks. And I always say, you know, in the spectrum of restaurants, there's McDonald's all the way up to Per Se, right? And the idea is, frankly, that I don't really want to eat at either of those all the time.
No.
I want to stick more towards the middle of that spectrum.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? But from time to time, I want that sort of food as fuel experience. And mm-hmm. that's the same in the bar. Sometimes I just want that.
You just want a damn
beer
drink.
And a whiskey and a cheap, huge shot of just chartreuse over at
drink.
The tile bar for $7. Yeah, I'm in.
Don't put mustard in it. Just make me a drink.
Stop exactly. giving away company secrets, man.
Yeah. Sorry.
Don't go to tile bar.
Yes. Yeah, never heard of it.
Luckily, it's not called the tile bar.
Yeah. So secret code. If you can crack the code, you're in. But you know,
and
I feel
I'll
like
buy you shots of chartreuse
for $7.
Chartreuse.
So yeah, I think, you know, the human experience and the human part of bars is what makes them more you know, spectacular than what they're serving.
Yeah.
Right.
That, yeah, and go back to the book. Like, that's to me, like, when I'm looking through this book, I glance through and I see, like, more than like. Then seeing, like, oh man, just, I flipped past the shot, the Sacha Petrasky page. Oh.
That was a very officer. Sad thing to write, I have to say.
But like,
but that was necessary.
Flipping through, yeah, of course it was, and is. But like going through here, like it's like just looking at like I'm looking at personalities rather than recipes, and that I think you did a really great job on this book.
Thanks.
And you absolutely did catch a moment in time here with these recipes and with these stories.
That was the idea. I mean, I you know that was the ultimate goal. If I only was going to have a couple weeks to write it, to make it something personal, and you know, this is my history in this city, and these are the things that I like. So
it's very cool. Well, we're kind of getting to the we're at the end of the show, right?
We're kind of at the end here. I'm going to run down our calendar.
I just want to say this though before we do that. Amanda, it's like we've been neighbors and friends for a long time, and it's really nice to have you on the show today, and it's really nice to like just get to chat
about
this stuff and the stuff that we love, and I'm very happy for you to get this book out.
Thank you. It's very personal. Thank you, guys. It means a lot to me to be on the show.
Oh, well, you know, super happy to have you. You know, you're always a gem when you come into the bars. I'm always happy to see you. You always bring good energy and good vibes, and
we
love seeing you at Amore Margo and at Coup as well.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah, and we're super proud of your book. Again, we're going to plug it. New York Cocktails, an elegant collection of over 100 recipes inspired by the Big Apple.
I'm definitely using this stencil on top.
Oh, we're doing that tonight.
Yeah,
it's going to happen. I love it. So coming up next Wednesday, we've got Sam Gauthier from Boilermaker, also a longtime member of the CAP program down there at Tales of the Cocktail. I think he's done it. I want to say 6 years in a row.
Yeah, he's done it's a crazy. Lot.
So I don't think he's like that's. You don't really get to be at Tales.
Yeah, he's never seen.
I don't
Tales
think you get
cocktail.
To see Tales. He's like living in a room somewhere full of juice. random plug for my good friend and our good friend Philip Duff on the 19th at Coup. He's going to launch his new Geneva, Old Duff Geneva, be launching at Coup on Tuesday the 19th. Looking forward to tasting some of that. I got to taste some of it as it was being made, but I'm looking forward to see it in the bottle with the label and everything. Really proud of him. And we'll get him on the show to bring some of us to drink it as well. The following week, that'd be Wednesday the 20th. I still haven't nailed down. It's either going to be Tiki Adam or Mateo Lissardo from Lissardo. If we can get him, we'll bump Tiki Adam because he lives here in town. Following week, we got Andrew Meltzer, San Francisco USBG.
Meltzer Seltzer.
Yeah, Meltzer Seltzer.
Yeah.
Top shelf.
Top shelf.
Top shelf. The fourth, we got Brian and Leslie from Subject. They've got an incredible story about how they started their bar over in the Lower East Side. Following that, Adam Rich, the founder of Thrillist, the Cat Pack the week after that. Jim Meehan, you may have heard of him. He'll be the week after that. So, like, pretty stellar lineup of shows coming up. Please continue to tune in. And hang out with us every Wednesday at 3 o'clock. That's all I got, Damon.
Yeah, man. It sounds great. We are, this is my favorite time of year for both, like, creating cocktail menus and having people on the show. It's like, it's really great because like, just like with Amanda coming on the show today, it's like, it's also like book season's ramping up. So we're going to have a lot of really cool shows.
That's
coming
why Meehan's coming on. He's coming on with his new book.
Yeah.
That's going to be great.
So it's just an exciting time, man. It's my favorite time of year.
Awesome.
Also, I like wearing jackets.
Yeah.
I like wearing jackets.
I guess next week I'll have long pants on.
Oh, you probably won't. Knowing you probably won't. Anyway, but, I want to say thank you to Amanda Schuster. And thanks for bringing this...
this hooch.
This contraband.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
One more sip of that. So, again, tune into Heritage Radio Network for thousands of more shows just like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate so we'll keep shows like this on the air. And we love having you listen. So tune in next week. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much, guys. Cheers.
Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sell. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.